Welcome to the Herding Cats Podcast. We are a podcast for children's pastors by children's pastors. Here is your host, Todd Hixenbaugh.
Hey, everyone, and welcome to the Herding Cats Podcast. I am your host, Todd Hixenbaugh. I am so glad to be with you today. My guest today is someone who I've admired from afar for a long time. Truly a thought leader whenever it comes to next-gen ministry, and somebody who is a prolific author, a great speaker, and somebody I just respect a lot. I think that she has done many, many great things within the family ministry, next-gen ministry world, including being the co-founder of the Phase Project and the executive director of Orange. And she has lots and lots of great books that she's been a part of authoring, such as It's Just a Phase, all of the Phase guides that are a part of the Phase Project, and so many more things. I mean, she's great. Her name is Kristen Ivey, and she is on the podcast today. And so she was gracious enough to spend some time talking with me. And so I am not going to waste too much more time until I get into it. I would like to encourage you, though, that if you never want to miss another episode like this, you might want to consider subscribing to this podcast. It's free. You can do it right in your podcast player, whether you use Overcast, Apple Podcasts, Google Play Music, Stitcher, Spotify, whatever it is. You can follow us or subscribe to the podcast and never miss another episode. And why wouldn't you? I mean, come on. Like, this is like the thing to do. So go ahead and do that. Also, you can leave us a rating and write a review. It definitely is a way to help us out, pay us back for all of this wondrous content. So go ahead, do that. And I hope you enjoy the episode. I enjoyed being able to record this with her. A lot of fun. And so we're just going to jump into this right now. Well, Kristen, I'm so glad to have you on the Herding Cats podcast today.
Thanks so much for having me here, Todd. It's good to be here.
So you're known as being the director of messaging and the co-founder of the Phase Project and all that stuff, director of messaging with Orange. And then you also have really been one of the catalysts behind the Phase Project. But when I was just looking around and preparing for this, I found something that was interesting to me just because I think that some people might think that you were just born and like you were already like, this is going to be that person. She's going to do all that stuff. But I found out that you actually had a life before Orange, before all of that stuff. Who knew? Right? Like, that's kind of interesting. And so what I found was that you were actually a teacher before you kind of got into this whole world with Orange and with the Phase Project. And so you were a teacher. You taught, what was it, sophomore English?
And freshman biology.
And freshman biology. Who knew? Yeah. Who knew?
Well, I loved teaching. Yeah, yeah,
that's
great.
That's I love it. So many of you at Orange too. I feel like all of you have like teaching backgrounds, which is
There are a lot of our staff who come from an education background and did child development. Enjoyed the classroom. There's something about the classroom that I think has a lot of our hearts. Yeah.
Sure. No, I totally get that. Just as we're starting, what I want to ask you was, what's something that you've taken that's translated from when you your time in the classroom to now at Rethink with the things that you do there?
One of the things I actually miss about the classroom, but I think that translates, is the way that I could create experiences. And it was just an opportunity. It was like this is going to sound awful, but every day I had like 30 people that I could experiment on and try out creative ideas.
Right.
And it's fun to still get to have that kind of innovation and creativity. And I still remember, you know, lesson plans that I thought, wow, that really worked and it was fun and we all laughed and everybody kind of got the point, but it was out of the box. And also lesson plans that totally bombed. And I think both have been important in what I do now, to understand that, you know, you risk and you try and you create and you put together an experience. And you think about the tension and you think about all the elements, and then right. Sometimes it works and sometimes you are like, okay, well, I'm never going to do that again. and now I know, you know, I mean, and I think that's part of the fun of it.
I love it. So I'm just curious, what's something that what's like a thing that happened just in your time as a high school teacher that you're just going, wow, that was the craziest story I think that I can come up with from my time as a teacher?
There are a lot of those. You know, I was a teacher in my mid 20s, not on a podcast. I don't have a height advantage or a size advantage. Like, I'm a fairly petite person. And so classroom management was a challenge for me and something that I had to work on consistently. But, oh, goodness. You know, there was an exercise I did one time with vocabulary words where I told the students to make up their own sentence using their vocabulary words. And we would write the sentences on the board to dissect the sentence. It was part of sophomore English. And I realized very quickly that sophomore males should not be given the license to create whatever sentence they want to write in front of the class, in front of people. Because you can write really inappropriate sentences that still include sophomore vocabulary words. That was one lesson I learned. There's so many.
I love it. Yeah. It's, you know what it sounds like is when you play some of these games like whiteboard. There's different whiteboard games when I was an intern that I would play with high school boys. And
yeah.
I was like, oh my gosh, I'm so glad my boss is not in the room right now.
Exactly what it is. You're like, I just, as long as the assistant principal doesn't come to observe this lesson, I'm good because I'll never repeat it. And yeah.
I mean, the funny thing is the kids love it, but we're all going, that was so bad.
Especially like that moment when you go, I should have seen this coming. Why did I not see this coming?
Well, yeah. And it's always, you know. Who are you calling on the way home? You know, to say, you'll never believe what happened at work today. This was crazy.
Yeah.
I love it. Well, I think that you probably have a few less of those moments now, just as you're, a part of Orange and doing things with Orange. So you're one of the major voices in writing and creating the phase guides, and it's just a phase and all that stuff. Hopefully you have less of those moments.
I laughed when you said that, because I thought, actually, I can think of exact scenarios where the same has happened at Orange. And we look up and go, we wrote that on a piece of paper and not one of us caught that it was a bad idea. And I mean, and I say that, and just full disclosure, don't judge Orange. We really do take it through layers and layers and layers and layers of people who are looking at our scripts for a number of things. But every so often something gets through and you think, how did we not catch that?
It's chef, and isn't it? You it can just, say it. It's chef. It's chef every time. I just imagine chef sometimes, like, he's sitting in meetings and he's going, well, I'll tell you how we could jack this thing up. Did you think about this? For those of you who don't know who I'm talking about, it's Tom Chefshunas is somebody who works at Orange.
He's a phenomenal strategic thinker.
Yes, yeah. he would do that. But anyways, so you're, you know, Can you tell us a little bit about the phase project, where it came from, where this whole idea, what prompted it, and how did you guys get started with this? Because I think it's such a pivotal idea, particularly now within family ministry, next gen ministry, and I know that it's growing all the time with the Phase Center and everything that's been happening.
So Phase was a conversation that had been developing, I think, on our teams for a long time. And part of it had to do with something you mentioned right up front when you said that a lot of our team are educators. They come from an education background. And there were some things that we did intuitively that we were trying to figure out how we would explain. And I came through, you know, education is my background in undergrad, and had done, you know, student teaching and teaching and been in classroom settings. And when I left, I went to seminary and theology school. And I began to notice, both in my professional work with Orange and in my education, that there sometimes is this gap between what we know about human development and what we think about in terms of spiritual formation and theological education. And we can become so focused, I think, sometimes in church world and ministry world with handing kids a responsible theology that we become distanced from the actual person we're talking to. And so we had kind of had these conversations developing and joking about, you know, well, really, you have to know who you're talking to before you can communicate anything. And it doesn't matter what you're saying just because it's true. In other words, telling someone something that's true and expecting them to believe it and change their life because it's true just doesn't work.
Right.
I think we have to go, okay, not only are we trying to be theologically responsible, but we also want to be responsible with understanding who we're talking to and how to say what we want to say in a way that they'll hear what we hope they hear when we say it. So FACE was this project to marry child development and theology and to bridge that gap. And as we did that, I also began to realize that it was a lot of a deep exploration in empathy. Because so many of us as adults have completely forgotten what it's like to be a toddler, you know, preschooler. Right. You know, I mean, that's just how we're wired biologically. Our brains don't remember those years. They're deep, deep, deep down, I guess, you know, someone would say, in your subconscious somewhere. But you don't have, you know, physical memories of being a one-year-old.
Right.
We have to exercise empathy in order to get in a three-year-old. In the elementary years, we can kind of vaguely remember some things. In the middle school years, we've kind of intentionally forgotten those. You know, we don't want to think about what it was like to be a seventh grader anymore or an eighth grader. We're just kind of going, I'm glad I got through it. And in high school, one of the interesting things is many of us actually remember very clearly what it was like to be in high school. And there's a lot of, again, biological reasons for that. But our memories are so strong, and yet they can sometimes get in the way. And so there was just this opportunity for us to kind of help adults go back in time or imagine what it might be like if you're 10 years old, if you're 11 years old, and just get in a practice of thinking through that mindset as we prepare messages and small group questions and lessons and all these kinds of things for kids and teenagers.
What were some of those first conversations like as you were beginning to flesh out what this idea looks like, whether it was in the orange offices or if it was in coffee shops or restaurants? You know, what was some of those first conversations like?
That's a great question. I think given the fact that I have a really high opinion of teachers, I think each of us can probably find an educator in our life that maybe wasn't, you know, everything we had hoped they would be. But I also know there are a lot of amazing educators out there, just truly incredible humans who have given their life to this profession because they care about kids and they care about teenagers. And so we wanted to find teachers like that who would say, you know, I've been teaching second grade for 30 years because I love second graders. They're the best humans on the planet. And then get them in a room and say, okay, then if you have given your life to hang out with second graders, that's not normal. You know, that's not what an average adult person wants to do. There are lots of things that make educators quirky to go, you know, pay money to wear your own jeans on a Friday. Like, you're not the normal adult. So tell us why you do what you do. What makes second graders awesome? What helps you reach the heart of a second grader? What are common misconceptions adults have about second graders? You know, what are best practices that you've learned? And we just wanted to drill in and go, tell us what you know. And the interesting thing is we began to see themes with a lot of these conversations. And it was the themes that fascinated me more than anything. Because the anomalies, you're like, okay, well, that might or might not be true, or that's kind of your perception. But there were such strong threads that began to resonate. And then as a parent, especially, I'm sitting there going, gosh, I would like to know those things about my own kids before they enter those phases, you know?
Was it originally written for parents, or was it originally written for staff people? Because I think that the phase guides, definitely these new phase guides that you've put out, those are 100%.
Parent.
I can see those being for parents.
Yep, those are parents.
Yeah, but I'm looking at It's Just a Phase, the original.
Yep.
What was that originally written for? Who got it?
Yeah, I'm glad you asked that. That's actually not for parents. And it's funny to me, because I'll see parents recommending it as the best parent book they've read or something like that. And I'm sitting there screaming on the side going, oh, we didn't write that for you. You know, like, well, I guess it's fine if you read it.
I remember when that book came out. I remember whenever it came out, the next gen director at my church was literally buying this thing for parent, like all these parents that he knew. And I read this thing and I'm going, listen, I love orange, but I would never suggest this to a parent because this thing is in the weeds right now. Like, this is so in the weeds.
I think the subtitle is 13 Things Your Church Can Do as a response to these phases. So, you know, anyway, it's all right, though, because I think it's been helpful in a lot of ways that were beyond what we imagined. My co-author for the Facebook was Reggie Joyner, and he and I struggle with this. I initially started writing a completely different series than either of what's out right now. And I started that first, which was direct to parents. It was a book called Zero to One, and then there's another one called One and Two, and that was my plan to complete that series. So that was where it actually started. Reggie was integral in the decision to go to staff first and say, let's talk directly to the leaders and the ministry leaders so that they can understand what we're doing before we talk, you know, about this anywhere else. So we wrote the staff book first and then came back to do the 18 phase guides all for parents.
And I really appreciate you guys spending the time doing that, because now one of the most recommended things that I'm always telling parents to read are the phase guides. And I think that they really, what they do is they capture this real in the moment feeling.
Mm-hmm.
Like, oh my gosh, you know, Lily just did that last week, or this mm-hmm. is something that I've really been watching over the last 2 to 3 months. They really hit that on the head. And so I'm just so appreciative of you guys for putting the time in to create these resources. Because on the other end, right, me working, you know, in the trenches in a church, it's so helpful to be able to, whenever I get questions, to be able to go, hey, I don't know, but I have something that maybe will start you in the right direction. And that's the way that I have used that as a tool.
Right.
Is you know, hey, this might not have all the answers, but it's going to have a pretty good start for you to be able to think about that.
Right.
So that's how I've used it, and I've really just loved how that works. So thank you so much for putting those together.
I think in both an educator space and in a ministry space, one thing that's true is it's oftentimes hard for parents and leaders who care about a kid to know how to get on the same page. And, you know, with the frustration from teachers toward parents or from church leaders toward parents is, you know, they're very similar frustrations. And oftentimes you hear kind of the same frustrations from parents about their kid's teacher or about a ministry leader or somebody else in their kid's life. One of the things that I like about phase is it's a very practical connection point, which I think is one of the things you're bringing up in that, because, and this is one of those things that phase, I think, solidified for me, was listening to leaders and going, okay, a leader who has worked with fourth graders for 15 years, they understand something about the fourth grade that most parents don't know, because as a parent, I'm a mom of three kids. I mean, we're running through this thing. By the time I figure out what kindergarten's like, my kid's a first grader. By the time I feel like I got my, you know, feet under me in first grade, they're a second grader. I mean, they just keep moving and changing and everything. And so it's helpful when you're a parent to have somebody lean in and go, wait, this is kind of what happens in fourth grade. You know, this is normal. This is a baseline. Here's what you can expect. This is generally, you know, to be expected and okay. And, you know, your kid's not crazy. Those kind of things are really helpful to hear as parents from people who have been surrounded with groups of kids in a particular phase, and oftentimes have the privilege and the advantage of seeing kids interact with their peers outside of their home, which is just, you get to see some things that parents don't get to see. And the reverse is true as a parent, where you know a kid probably better than anybody else because you've spent so much time with them. Any kid that's living in your home, you just get to see a different side of them. And when two adults with two different perspectives on a kid can come together with something in common, that really does give a kid the best advantage to win.
Right. Well, equipping parents within our churches, it's really become this, it's a buzz phrase. It's a buzzword. Mm-hmm. Everybody's
sure.
talking about how can
sure.
we better equip, you know, how can we equip parents? You know, it's one of the top questions asked, I think, right behind how do I get more volunteers? how can I better equip parents? And so,
and how do I talk to my senior pastor?
And
right?
How do
top,
I,
probably top three.
Did you,
yeah.
Right. How do I get more money in the budget? Yeah.
Yeah.
All those things. How can ministries, I've said a little bit about how I use them, but how can ministries leverage these resources, whether it's the actual book, it's just a phase, or the phase guides, how can they leverage these books, these resources, to really have the maximum impact that they can on the ministries?
That's a great question. We're actually in the middle of a project right now that we're spending a lot of time on. Another book that will be coming out called When Parents Win, which is to help leaders understand this idea of what it looks like to connect with parents and help parents. But I think fundamentally, oftentimes, there's this fine line between wanting to be helpful to a parent and just wanting parents to show up at our ministries and participate in our churches and volunteer for what we do. And I think the danger there is actually even higher in church world than in many other professions, because you got into ministry probably because you feel called to this, you care about it, you're passionate about it. There's something about it that feels like what the church does has eternal value and should obviously be the most important thing in somebody's life. And so that's probably what got you in here. And sometimes that passion, while it's such a great thing, can also get in the way, because if we're not careful, we become self-focused and we believe that the rest of the world should just care about what we do more than anything else in their life. And I think that that's one of the things that gets in the way of us truly partnering with parents in the way that we should as ministries, that we're instead trying to get parents to prioritize us instead of us prioritize helping them. And FaZe is just one of many resources that we can use as churches and as church leaders to be helpful to parents, to say, okay, hey, if your kid's starting kindergarten, here's a few things you should know about kindergartners. They get really, these guys get so practical. It's like, here's some books you might want to read together. Yeah. Here are phrases you might want to say to your kid that would be meaningful to them right now in this phase. So it's just really, here's some work, jobs that your kid should be capable of doing, probably, you know, kind of baseline, like, by the time they're this old, they can make their own bed. By the time they're this old, they can, you know, cook some mac and cheese. So just practical day-to-day stuff that is helpful in a parent's world.
What are some dashboard warning signs for children's pastors, student pastors, next-gen directors that they might be in a spot where they're caring more about having parents be involved than actually equipping them? Are there any signs or some things that we can be looking at that can be a good indicator?
Yeah, well, I love one example that our good friend Kara Powell uses is just to look at your phone, look at your email. Who are the last three parents that you texted or the last three parents that you emailed? And were you asking something of them or were you helping them with something? Mm. I mean, there's a good baseline to just say, what am I spending more of my energy on? Now, the reality of ministry world is you do have to find chaperones, you know, to us sometimes. I mean, you do have to find drivers. I've been there where I'm like, all right, I'm the one who signed up to lead these crazy middle schoolers. None of them drive. I've got to have enough seatbelts. I mean, there's just reality there. But at the same time, we really do have to take seriously the way that our churches can lean into a parents' world, because parenting is also a very hard job with a low paycheck.
I'm going to ask you, as a mom, what's something that you would be really appreciative of, whether it's a small group leader or the actual director of whatever ministry your kid's in? What's something that you'd be super appreciative of if you got it in an email or a text message, or something that even they could do for you?
That's great. I think something specific. And I have a bias towards small group leaders and relational leaders who can know kids' names. And so that's where my bias goes, because when I hear from a church and it feels corporate and it's, you know, the big banner headliner, that's kind of good. At least I know what's going on in your ministry. But there's absolutely nothing better than a leader who would reach out and say, hey, just so you know, Sawyer shared this in group this week. And I mean, it could be simple, like, said something funny and made us all laugh. That now I know as a mom that, you know, my kid is funny when he's around his peers, because I don't get that inside information. You know, sometimes it's like, what is their world like when they leave the home? And are they good people when I'm not around? And are they saying kind things? Are they, and even if it's, you know, our friend Jeff Henderson says this all the time. He says that the average person hears 7 words of criticism to every 1 word of encouragement. And in parenting world, I think that that's extremely true, where typically as a parent, what you hear from other people is, I mean, if the school calls you up, it's probably not good news. If the teacher says we need to talk, it's not good news. There's just a lot that can either be an expectation of you, a critique of you, something that went wrong with your kid. And so just simple and specific words that are positive about your kid can go a long way.
Love that. I want to switch gears a little bit to the conferences. I mean, your organization, obviously, you with Rethink Group, with Orange, you put out all sorts of curriculum, books. I mean, you books for days, curriculum for days. I mean, you have a curriculum for everything. I mean, I'm just saying. It's true.
It's true. There's a lot of words.
Shout out to everybody at Orange. But one of the other major pieces, and I think it's something that's even growing momentum. I mean, I think there's really something that's got a lot of momentum coming behind this, are the conferences. Mm-hmm. And so you guys put on the major spring conference, which is kind of like the everybody comes together and it's a big family mm-hmm. reunion and the whole thing. But then also you have the Orange Tour, which happens yep. in the fall. Why is it so important to bring leaders together from churches all over the world to talk about family mm-hmm. ministry? Why is that still so important? I mean, can't we just read books, listen to podcasts? I mean, why is this so important still? And these conferences wow. are growing like crazy.
Mm-hmm. I think it's never been more important for us to get in rooms together. When you look at the conversations that happen online, they're just not at the same caliber as what you know happens when you get in a room with somebody. And more than ever, we're connected digitally in a way that's a little bit less personal than when we can connect and be, you know, eye to eye, sit across the table, be in the same room, because there's just something about the type of communication that matters. And church is, I mean, what we, our communities need. Our communities need for the church to win. And if we care about the global church, we need to care about each other. Thinking a lot about the story of the prodigal son.
Yeah.
And, you know, this year at conference, one of the thoughts that I just think about all the time, maybe it's because I'm a mom, I don't know, is that I care deeply that each one of the individual churches in a community are winning, because my kids are going to go out into the world and I don't know what church they may find themselves at one day. They may show up on the doorstep of a church I've never met. And I want that church to be ready to welcome them in and receive them and help them with their faith the minute they get there. And it's not just that I care about the physical church I attend right now, but there is this global church concern, and we've got to fight for each other, not against each other. And I think the only way you can fight for each other is to get in a room to talk about a lot of the serious issues that we all are facing, that we're all trying to wrestle with, that we're all dealing with. And, you know, I think we make better decisions sometimes when we're together than we do on our own.
Sure. How has Orange continued to innovate and really continue to be one of the leaders in bringing people together and putting on mm-hmm. these experiences that are an experience? I mean, mm-hmm. you're getting an experience. I mean, not many people get to hear Elevation Worship and North Point Worship and, I mean, dear Lord, I mean, all of these different unbelievable bands. I mean, it's an experience, but at the same time, bringing mm-hmm. such content. How have you guys continued to innovate and every year create something that really brings people together mm-hmm. in a real sense?
I mean, now you're hitting on my fears. I'm always afraid of what if that didn't happen. And you know what? I think that that's...
you can brag a little bit. You're allowed.
No, that's not bragging. I think that's about as real as it gets. I think the way that it happens is because of the connection of churches that do Orange, that there is something philosophically that aligns churches that do Orange, that really care about the next generation, that prioritize for the next generation, that it is a community of people who are in touch with teenagers and doing life with kids and understanding the nuances of family. And when those leaders are connected, we have this unique opportunity to hear and be on the phone with leaders who are wrestling with issues every single day. Our Orange specialists Shout out to the Orange specialists. Wow. We have a team of leaders who've led in ministry, and they're on the phone every day with thousands of church leaders, troubleshooting problems and working through ministry solutions. And I think as we all are part of this kind of global conversation, that's what keeps us innovative together.
What's the best way for an individual this year attending conference? They're coming. Maybe it's their first time. Maybe they've been there a couple times. Maybe they've come to every Orange Conference since Orange Conference was still being hosted at North Point. What's the best way that an individual can leverage conference this year to its maximum potential?
Wow. I would say meet somebody who does what you do, but maybe in a totally different context than where you do it. So if you're at conference, probably more than, and we'll spend hours and hours working on the messages and the speakers and the who, you know, is speaking and what they're saying. And we probably overdo it on strategy and intentionality from the platform. But at the same time, I think absolutely nothing will be more helpful to you than finding somebody that you connect with, that you go, you know, man, they're sharp. They're a sharp leader. I want to learn from them. Getting their number and just connecting with them regularly throughout the year. One of the best things I think is just the connections that happen when we all get together with leaders who are like-minded, who are wanting to be innovative, who are wanting to reach the next generation, and finding that other person that you go, I'm going to learn from you and we're going to stay in touch.
What's the thing right now that has you the most excited, whether it's on the phase project side or if it's on the other side with working at Orange? What's got you the most excited right now?
Whew, there's so many things. My heart is always going to be Orange and everything that it's about. I just believe that there's something that happens when churches in the community are winning that changes the community. And I love this year's theme. So I'm excited about the conversations that I know will happen as a result of this year's theme. It has the potential to kind of bother us in good ways. This year, we're talking about why it's personal, why what we do is personal. And so I think I'm just excited about talking through how churches can be more personal in their community.
Yeah. Yeah, love that. How have you continued to develop yourself? I mean, you're in charge of all sorts of things. You're, you know, on top of that, you're a mom, you're a wife. How have you continued to develop yourself as in all of those areas, or even just as a leader? How have you continued to grow and expand?
That is a great question. I'm wired to be a learner. So I love to listen to podcasts. I love to read, but also mostly just, I think even in the relationships that I've been privileged to have with other leaders, just to be able to ask hard questions. And I think the number one way that I think I've grown as a leader is just putting myself in circles with people who are different than me and asking questions and not being afraid to sound unintelligent, not being afraid to sound, you know, there's all these things that I could go, gosh, if I asked this question, how would you perceive me? And I think it takes a level of bravery sometimes to just go, I want to ask, I want to learn from you. And I want to listen to your answer. I think that's another way that I want to grow and continue to grow as a leader. There are layers to listening. You know, I think sometimes I hear people and I go, okay, I heard them and we're done. And then I sit with it and go, I don't know if I heard really. I would go back and ask some more questions to see if I can hear better. And I think that's probably the best way.
And where can somebody find information if they want to learn more from you or just check out your social media? Where can people go?
You know, I'm on Instagram, Facebook, but you can go to kristenivy.com. It'll link over to all of social platforms and places to find me. I'm on the Parent Q podcast, one of the hosts of that, which is something that we do for parents specifically to help them win at home every week.
Which is an awesome podcast. I suggest everybody who's listening, check that out. Well, thanks, Kristen, so much for coming on the show today.
All right. Thanks so much for having me, Todd.
So I love being able to make new friends through the podcast and just be able to hang out with people like that. I get to talk with really cool people. And so I'm super thankful to Kristen and to just given the time to be able to have us sit down and talk. And so hope you enjoyed that conversation. Next week, we're going to have a really fun conversation as well. Michaela White, who is the executive director of INCM, or International Network of Children's Ministry, she's going to be on. And so I have a clip that I want you to listen to so that you can hear a little bit about what that conversation is going to sound like next week. So here's that for you to get yourself ready.
That helps me understand what I bring to the table, but more importantly, it helps me understand what I don't bring to the table. And so I don't have to feel like I have to be all things to all people, and can find on my team the people who do fill in those gaps and who take up different areas of strength much better than I ever could. And I know I have to give them the space to be able to exercise that and to share that with the team. And it's going to make us all better.
I don't know about you, but that makes me really excited to be able to share that with you next week. And so, again, if you don't want to ever miss another episode, you can hit the subscribe button. It's the best way to never have to miss something again on this podcast. And you'll get to hear Michaela next week talking. And it'll be really fun. She's a great lady, just like Kristen is. And so both of them are phenomenal. Hey, don't forget, we're going to be airing another podcast episode on Thursday this week, and that is going to be something you're also not going to want to miss, because I'm going to be talking about all sorts of crazy stuff on that episode. I've been researching and finding some great material for you, and so go ahead and subscribe so that you don't miss that either. Hey, this is a podcast. It's done. And I'm so glad that you joined me for it today. Until next time, I'm praying for you. I hope this podcast helps you to grow and learn so that you can grow and so that you can help children grow and learn too. Till next time, keep learning, keep growing. Deuces, y'all.
Thank you for listening to the Herding Cats Podcast. We hope you tune in next time.